The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Good morning, everyone. Wednesday, August 12th, it's Talk Back. And we are again with you for two full hours. Mr. Nick Christensen over there taking your phone calls. Good morning, Mr. Nick.
Good morning.
And we are not alone in our studio this morning. We have two of our favorite guests joining us, Dr. Peter Kolb, forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry, and Sandy Perrin, a retired now plant clinic coordinator. But you look so relaxed. good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
All right. So as you know, Dr. Kolb and Sandy are here to talk about all things in nature, whether it's plants and trees and that sort of thing. But they love taking your phone calls. And so if you have a question for Dr. Kolb or Sandy, the phone lines will be open from now until 10 o'clock at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Let's let you guys kick it off. So, Dr. Kolb, go ahead. But what we were talking a little bit about the problems with fire and the state of the forest right now being so dry.
Well, I mean, here we are again, of course. It's fire season in Montana. We've been a little bit blessed. If you look on the maps of drought and fire danger and all of that, northwestern Montana is a little green island out there, and it's not coincidental. You know, we do have the super El Nino that's blowing hot air up from California, which seems to be pretty common these days, both environmentally and politically. But we also are in a cool, wet phase of Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which is why we had our wet spring and late snowstorms and things like that.
So, I've always wanted to ask you what decadal oscillation means. It sounds like a whole bunch of words shoved together.
You know, it means it goes up and down on a 10-year basis, which isn't true.
All right.
But, you know, it means that there are long-term patterns that occur and they're semi-predictable. And really, it's the northern Pacific ocean temperature that dictates whether we have high pressures or low pressures. High pressure circulate clockwise, low pressure circulate counterclockwise. So we've had a high pressure off the northern Pacific, big clockwise rotation that's bringing air up into Canada and down across western Montana, which is why we get all the rain we did this spring. It was a very wet spring.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very cold spring, which is why all the flowers got nailed and we have no huckleberries. We have no service berries.
Wow.
We almost even have poor snowberries, which, you know, is really starvation food, which is why our bears are all starving and expect a really bad year for bears, because normally they're up on the mountainsides all summer long gorging themselves on huckleberries. That's
right.
How they put on the fat. They haven't had that. I've got game cams up on my property up in Evero. And all the bears I've seen are skinnier and all get out.
Wow.
Usually they're roly-poly this time of year, and they're just skinny.
So, Sandy, about a minute and a half before we take our break. So, an opening statement from you.
Yeah, so, you know, certainly with this smoke, people worry about, you know, trying to get things ripen, and it certainly is a concern, because without the amount of heat units and sunshine during the day, a lot of gardens are maybe struggling a little as ripening is slowing down. The nights have gotten a little cooler, so that's another thing when you're not staying above 50 at night. So there's a lot of, but of course there's still a long season left. You know, we've theoretically got over a month before the first frost in the fall, mm-hmm. which has seemed to be later and later the last several years anyway. So there's time.
All right. Well, the reason that Dr. Kolb and Sandy are here is to answer your questions. And we already have one caller waiting, but we are just seconds away from our first commercial break. So we'll do that. When we come back, we will get Steve's call on and many other phone lines open. If you have a question for Dr. Kolb or Sandy, whether it's about your garden or about what's going on in the forests here in western Montana, feel free to pick up phone, give us a call. That's why they're here, to answer your questions at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And, of course, Peter and Sandy will be with us all the way until 10 o'clock for two full hours of great advice. We're going to come right back with Talk Back after this.
Announcing Paul.
Dennis Bragg with the updated forecast. Patchy smoke again Wednesday, but tracking changes that should help with clearing. Partly sunny with increasing clouds later. Still warm with highs in the upper 80s. A 20% chance of rain developing early Thursday, increasing to 50% throughout the day. Some of those showers may develop as thunderstorms, mixed with sunny periods and some lingering smoke. Chance of showers and thunderstorms continue Friday and Saturday, upwards to a tenth to a quarter of an inch. Overnight lows in the 40s, daytime highs in the upper 70s.
Good to have you along on this Wednesday, August 12th. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls, and we're always privileged to have with us Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin to offer their advice on forestry and, of course, gardens and things that are going on in your yard. And Steve was the first to call this morning. Steve, good morning. You're on with Peter and Sandy. Go ahead.
Good morning, Peter and Sandy. Hey, question for you. As you know, just 120 miles down the road from us, two weeks ago, 700 homes were destroyed by an urban wildfire, an arsonist in that case, a homeless murderer who had decided to light fires all over Spokane for a number of years. Last week, there was a fire started by a homeless encampment in Missoula. I don't know if you'll remember the Hua Hut on Brooks. That was a fire that destroyed that restaurant or former restaurant by a homeless drug addict living in the shed behind it. The last summer, there was a fire started by another homeless encampment down by the, Osprey Field, whatever they're called now. My question to you is that given that the city and county are doing nothing to prevent this criminality from occurring, and we have an example just down the road from us, the next major city from Missoula, where 700 families are now displaced and their lives torn apart. What can we do as Missoulians from an urban perspective to protect our homes, given that the county and city are doing nothing at all and the press is doing nothing at all to report on these risks to our well-being here locally? If you could provide any tips or tricks for us to protect our homes in the urban setting in the city, because that's really where the risk is right now, given these fires I just gave you examples of, that could ignite at any time by these homeless vagrant criminals. I would really appreciate it, and I'm sure your listeners would deeply appreciate it. We're all scared. We saw what happened down the road, and no one's doing anything about it. We're hoping you could provide some simple guidance here for us to protect ourselves.
Steve, thanks for the call. Okay, dire words there. Go ahead. Please.
Well, there's two issues, really, main issues there. One is the social issue, So fires will ignite, whether it's homeless people or kids playing with matches or dragging trailer chains and those types of things. So ignitions will occur no matter where. Now, and that's not something I'm an expert in. On the other hand, the fuel situation is something that I do work in quite a bit. And what happened in Spokane, hate to say it, has been predicted for decades. We got a wake-up call on the Palisades fire down in Los Angeles, where you have cured grasses and brush growing right up into communities. And we have urban communities that have really balked at dealing with the fire issue. I mean, so we've had numerous initiatives in Montana to fund better fire preparedness. And most of the communities like Bozeman, representatives, et cetera, all said, no, it doesn't affect us. Well, the Palisades fire in California, like I said, was a wake-up call. Spokane, not a surprise. So these are, you have a lot of cured out grasses. Any place where you have drought, Helena, even Missoula, where you have cured grasses and brush, and Spokane was not largely a forest fire. It was a fast-moving grass fire. And grass fires will move at 80, 90 miles an hour, where forest fires maybe 5 miles an hour. So that issue is something we've been warning people about. Most urban areas are not fire wise, they're not fire prepared. And what we learned out of the Palisades fire in California is once you have 8 houses on fire, local fire departments are overwhelmed and saturated. They can't deal with more than roughly that number. Don't, you know, use eight as the super number, but somewhere in there. So in Spokane, you had fast-moving grass fires that will produce 12, 16-foot flames, burn into communities that were pretty densely housed. No firewise work. And once you had a bunch of houses on fire, they were putting other houses on fire. I mean, it's almost like a fusion reaction, if you will. And this can happen to any city in Montana. And again, we go back to issues, the wildland-urban interface, you know. So we had initiatives saying, the only people that benefit from fire suppression is the wildland-urban interface. And I told our legislators in a committee hearing that, no, that's where we catch the fires, because landowners there in Montana, many of them, not all of them, have done a lot of work. And so once you have fuel-reduced areas, which is what we need, not just in the wildland-urban interface, but in the municipalities,
right.
A lot of Missoula's pretty good about that way, but once you have those fuels managed, then the fire can't burn into those communities. But if you think, we're safe because we're in a community here, we got fire departments, you know, I got a house right next door, I'm not worried about that. Well, you have the vegetation around the house, and then you have your house. So as I say, on a hot, warm day, if you can take just a normal match and light your house on fire with that, as Jack Cohen's research has shown, we get ember storms. So imagine a snowstorm, only instead of snowflakes, it's burning
fire.
Embers.
It's fire.
This is what happened in Spokane. This is what happens all the time. And those houses are very ignitable. It's 90 degrees out. There's a wind blowing. And Spokane had a 30-mile-an-hour wind gust. Everything dry. And so you had this, if you will, ember storm flow into the town, and it started setting houses on fire, and houses set other houses on fire.
And unfortunately, there's not much anybody can do to stop it, unless you're just standing out there with a hose by your house and just wetting it down constantly.
Well, that's kind of like trying to put out a bonfire with a squirt gun, okay?
Right.
You have to be prepared,
right?
You know, and so this early summer, you know, we had got all that rain, tall grasses, things like that. July, I was mowing everything down. If you got horses, livestock, you want to strategically graze the fine fuels. So you got to manage the fuels.
When we come back, we're going to get Rick's call, and all of our other phone lines are open, by the way. And if you have a question for Dr. Kolb and Sandy Perrin, please, this is the time. Get in the queue, and we'll get your calls on just as quickly as we can. The number 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Of course, Dr. Kolb, forestry specialist, Sandy Perrin, retired plant clinic coordinator. And we're going to continue with our conversation with them right after this timeout on TalkBack statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
In a world of complicated...
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries, leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
Hi, I'm E.J. Williams. Each year, millions of animals are abandoned, and more than a million are euthanized before they can be rescued. Organizations like American Humane are working to harness the healing power of the human-animal bond, as animals can be trained as life-saving service and therapy dogs to help veterans, the elderly, and children with special needs to overcome the obstacles of everyday life. To find out how you can help give animals and the people they help a new leash on life, please visit AmericanHumane.org.
Oh,
Hey, we're back on Talk Back. Glad to have you along this morning on this Wednesday, August the 12th. Our guests here in the studio, Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin, and calls are already coming in. Rick is waiting with a question or comment. Rick, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question for Sandy. I did an experiment this in the past 2 years with tomatoes. I took one of my tomato patches and let it rest, and I grew borage in it. And then this spring, I tilled the borage up, put it back into the ground. And right now, I have tomatoes that are like 6 feet tall, and they've got tons of fruit on them. And I was wondering if I'm tilling that borage in added to the bumper crop that I'm getting and the height of the tomatoes with the nitrogen back into the ground.
Sandy is smiling.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, whenever you do a cover crop like that, you're putting a lot of nutrients back in there. And if you know, certainly with that type of crop, you definitely had a lot of nitrogen content, you know, but it still added some other nutrients. It gave you also really good organic matter, which is holding that moisture in, which tomatoes love water, you know, especially early on. That's how they start setting their fruits. They got their, you know, a tomato is a lot of water. So definitely you gave it a great fertilization and, you know, a good boost.
Well, and then I have a second question on tomatoes. As well as the one tomato patch is doing, the other one hasn't done very well. I try to experiment with determinate and indeterminate tomatoes. And my indeterminate tomatoes are going crazy. My determinate tomatoes are dead. And I don't know if it's just the life cycle, but I never got any fruit on my determinate tomatoes. They grew, but I never got any fruit. And I know that the life cycle of them isn't the same as an indeterminate. And did I do something wrong, or is our area not very well served to grow determinate tomatoes?
No, determinants definitely work here, but you know, it was a cool, wet spring. And so I noticed a lot of, if you put tomatoes out fairly early or even just normal, we did have a frost in June. So some of those determinants might have got hit by that frost and stressed. And when, you know, they stress, plus a determinant does stop blooming a lot faster than an indeterminate. They have a certain cycle and they're done, which helps them set fruit at a more, you know, can a time when then they're all come ripe a little bit more together. So that could be it. You know, could, you know, maybe the nutrition in that still is, you know, not adequate, but as long as you got a good crop of indeterminates, sounds like you're set.
What about my lemon cucumbers? I usually have bumper crop of lemon cucumbers, and I'm giving them away. I have very, very little. Do you think it has anything to do with the weather early on?
Only if they were out early on and got too stressed. I know several people said that they planted cucumber starts several times. You know, they started early. I started late because of all the frost. I actually didn't. I seeded some, and I put starts out. And they're going game busters. So as long as you didn't get them too stressed early on, I think is more the case.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, sir. And so that leaves all of our phone lines open. Peter, do you want to add anything?
Well, I just want to add that, again, this is somewhat forestry related, but last year you all may have noticed we had a bumper crop of ponderosa pine cones and seeds. And again, it was climatically or weather related. We had a series of weather events the year before, frost and all of that. So this last year, and we've noticed that, I mentioned that here in TalkBack, that we didn't see any birds in the bird feeders because there were so many ponderosa pine seeds. They were fully satiated with the natural seeds. Well, that ponderosa pine bumper cone crop also produced the rodent population from Hades.
Oh.
Because they didn't starve, and they just reproduced like mad. So, like in my garden this year, I was overrun by mice, deer mice, and chipmunks, and everything else that were doing really well. I mean, I trapped over 30 deer mice out of my garden, which is, you know, yeah, I get a couple of them every year, but And they were digging up all my seeds. As soon as I planted my garden, the next day I came out, and everywhere I planted my peas and beans and everything, they were holes and they were dug out, you know. So, you know, the rodent, the incredible rodent population that was out there may have also played a role.
Certainly.
All right. So how do you deal with that? I mean, is there a way to protect your plants from the rodents?
Well,
aside from being out there with a shotgun or whatever, you know, a pellet gun.
I use an old, I learned it from my grandparents, and they would always bury a bucket full of, with a little bit of water in it in their garden. I'm too lazy to dig a hole and bury a bucket, so I put a 5-gallon plastic bucket out there, and I smear some peanut butter about an inch down on the inside edge, and I put about 3 inches of water in the bottom. And the mice have no problem getting up top there. They get greedy. They want the peanut butter. They fall in the bucket, and they drown. It's a little disgusting because you come out, and there's, you know, I've had as many as 13 dead mice in the morning in there, you know. And so then I just dig a little hole and dump them into there. And that way, and I have that in my garden all summer long.
All right, we're up against a break. When we come back, we have Ed waiting to visit with you. Again, joining us here in the studio this morning, Dr. Peter Kolb, forestry specialist, and Sandy Perrin, a retired plant clinic coordinator. And here to answer your questions now till 10 o'clock. So get busy. Give us a call, 406-721-1290. We're coming right back with more of Talk Back right after this quick timeout on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Dennis Bragg with the updated forecast. Patchy smoke again Wednesday, but tracking changes that should help with clearing. Partly sunny with increasing clouds later. Still warm with highs in the upper 80s. A 20% chance of rain developing early Thursday, increasing to 50% throughout the day. Some of those showers may develop as thunderstorms mixed with sunny periods and some lingering smoke. Chance of showers and thunderstorms continue Friday and Saturday, upwards to a tenth to a quarter of an inch. Overnight lows in the 40s, daytime highs in the upper 70s.
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries. Leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
Severe flooding leaves cars unsafe to drive, and some vehicles end up for sale with no indication they were in a flood. Use NICB's free online VIN check service to help ensure a car is in its promised condition. To report fraud, contact NICB at reportinsurancefraud.org. A public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
We are back on Talk Back, and our guests here in the studio again, Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin, giving you advice on all sorts of things to do with what's going on in your yard and garden in the forests, and folks are waiting on the phone. Ed, good morning. You're up first. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. I've got a cousin who lives in western Washington, and we both got grape cuttings from my our grandfather's plants, grape plants, and they both grew nicely from cuttings and got grapes on them, and that's what we wanted. Well, he's got another grandfather, of course, that we don't share, and he got his grapes to grow in western Washington, but they produce no grapes, nothing, year after year after year. They don't produce grapes anymore. Is that common for a grape plant like that to lose its ability to produce grapes when it's transplanted?
No, I would say not. It certainly would have to do more with its climate and hardiness, which, you know, in Western Washington, if, you know, they're quite a bit warmer than we are, but without knowing variety, no, I would say it has to do with somehow the hardiness of the plant or nutrition, possibly.
And how long ago were those transplanted?
Probably 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so transplants especially, they need to regrow the root system. So I also planted some grapes that I got from New England that were hardy for here, and they're a beautiful seedless variety. They grew for 6 years without ever producing any fruit, and now all of a sudden I'm getting bumper crops. So, you know, it might have something to do with their stress levels. So plants will go through what we call mast cycles. They got to store up sugar, carbohydrates to produce a fruit. And if they're stressed, they just have producing enough carbohydrate to stay alive, but not enough to produce fruit. So you might try fertilizing them with a well-balanced fertilizer and keep them, well, Western Washington is not an issue, but here, well-watered makes a difference. And then, you know, it all depends. If the flowers are getting frozen off, you know, then that also is a factor.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate it. Emmett is standing by. Emmett, go ahead. You're on with Dr. Kolb and Sandy.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Well, I have, there's a happy thing that happened with my garden, but I have a question about it because it's a mystery. I had more flowers than I thought. See, we have a community garden here in my complex. It's in the back courtyard. It's really nice. Well, I thought some neighbors had planted some flowers in their section, and I had planted some flowers in mine, and it's pretty good. It turns out my neighbors hadn't planted any flowers in that section. I recognized the variety. They're from a variety of a seed pack of variety flowers that I got a few years ago. You know, sometimes I've called up and asked why my garden has failed. This year, it's really, my garden is flourishing with beautiful flowers, but the seeds now are in areas that I didn't even plant in. It's really flourishing. Do you have a, it's a happy thing. I'm happy I have more flowers than I thought. But if you could clear up the mystery and why I've planted some, sometimes they never grew, and then this year they're just growing all over the place. It's very happy, but it is a mystery. It's wonderful, though. It's interesting.
Well, do flowers, especially annual flowers, reseed a lot? So some years, if we have a really harsh winter, possibly mm-hmm. those seeds aren't viable or they lose their viability. Last year, we had a really mild winter. So a lot of those seeds, you know, they survived. And they, you know, like I said, plants reseed. So they spread their seed around and birds spread seed around. And those, obviously, it was a great moist spring, got things off to a good start. So that was just that they, what I call law of nature, things just took off a lot faster, and we had such a mild winter.
Very interesting. Well, how could they reseed if they hadn't bloomed yet last year? Because I'm kind of confused.
Oh, if they didn't bloom last year, then there were some seeds that were just dormant. They had to came in from somewhere.
Interesting, because I know there's been some other seeding. It's fascinating. Well, all right, we may never know, but thanks for taking my call. Very interesting.
All right, Emmett, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And perfect timing because we're coming up against a break. And all of our phone lines are open, by the way. If you have a question for Dr. Kolb, forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry, and Sandy Perrin, a retired plant clinic coordinator, here to answer your questions all the way till 10 o'clock this morning. The number 406-721-1290. We're going to come right back after this timeout on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Montana weather.
Hey, we are back on Talk Back. And again, Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin here to answer your questions about your yard and your garden. And Harry's been waiting the longest. Harry, good morning. You're on. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning, folks. Yeah, Peter, you were saying earlier that there's no cypress berries, which I noticed, and also no snowberries. And also that we have apple trees and there's no apples. Please expand on what, or expound on what happened, because I don't remember having a real heavy frost or anything. I mean, there was some cold, but, what did happen?
Well, I mean, heavy frost is kind of like as in the eye of the beholder. It was cold enough that it froze a lot of the blossoms out, you know, and it was more of a slushy snow, a late snow that got us as well. But like you, I mean, my apples have not produced. I got fewer plums than normal, all of that. But, you know, it just has to briefly dip below 32. Usually doesn't do it, but I'd say about 30 degrees, 28 for me is the thing.
Yeah.
You know, it just has to drop down to 28 for half an hour. And it's usually right in the morning, right at first light when it's the coldest. And that was enough to kill the blossoms back. And so it may not have been as noticeable to us, but it was very noticeable to the plants. And remarkably, the huckleberries, you know, they're usually pretty frost resistant, but it was very, very late in the spring.
Also, we had one in June, so that was the other, I think it was June 8th or something like that, which we rarely have a late frost, and it was 28.
Just bad timing. Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate it. And that leaves Skip. Skip, good morning. You're on with Sandy and Dr. Kolb. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Peter, and Dr. Kolb and Sandy. Thanks for coming on. Tell you what, I got about 100 questions. I'll keep it to two. But I want to tell everybody, though, if you have an opportunity to go watch Dr. Kolb, and some, I think Sandy's with him sometimes, do a talk, like, for instance, Fire in the Root or something like that, it's amazing the bases that he covers. You'll feel like you have a whole semester of silviculture, entomology, and botany all wrapped into one, and that's just before the break. So I want to tell you, if you could tell us by the end of the program, sir, where you might be speaking or places that we could go to get updates on things that you have your thumb on, we'll sure appreciate it. I wanted to ask you, like I normally do, about something that I've noticed here and certainly worldwide and in our country we need to start putting our thumb on the pulse of, and that is our pollinators. Would you please take off and give us some cliff notes on things that are happening that way and maybe things that we can do, especially in this kind of smoke patterns and dry spells. What can we do to help something as important as our pollinators? Thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call.
Well, that's an enormous topic, and thank you for the kind words. Certainly appreciate that. Well, you know, pollinators are somewhat cyclical as well, but just a few basic caveats, of course, they feed off of nectar on flowering plants. So trying to promote flowering plants is very important. And so watering and keeping those flowering plants alive through the summer is necessary. Now, that said, I mean, I'm more keyed into natural ecosystems, forest ecosystems, and I'll turn over to Sandy for more of your backyard scenario. But, you know, here's a little bit of a shocker. We talk a lot about old growth forests and dense forests. Conifers and dense forests do not promote flowering plants. They shade them out. They outcompete them for water. So in our natural cycle in Montana, which was heavily disturbance and always is, we can't get away from that. Disturbances that kill trees, whether it's bugs, avalanches, fires play a role in all of that. But we historically have had a landscape of many different phases of what we call succession. So a fire burns up the landscape, and now you get the forbs and the shrubs, and those over time slowly get shaded back out by trees. But again, it's not just fire. So this is where thoughtful timber harvesting plays a role, because it can emulate, it creates those openings, And the plants, they store their seeds for a long time. This goes back to Emmett's question, where the flowers came from. Some of these plants, like evergreen ceanothus, will store its seeds in the ground for 200 to 300 years. And they're just waiting for a disturbance that heats up the soil temperature, and they germinate, and all of a sudden you have a whole mountainside full of flowers. And that's the way that Montana and Northern Rockies ecosystems work. So if you want to promote pollinators, you need to have a diversity of plant communities out on the landscape. And the way you have a diversity of plant communities out in the landscape is that you promote a mosaic of different stages of forest development. And that means openings, that means mid-sized trees, that means patches of old growth. But if you're promoting only a forest of old growth, which is a very unnatural state for Montana and Northern Rockies forests, you're actually managing against pollinators, because there are no flowering plants or very few flowering plants underneath those old growth forests. So, promote diversity of native plant species. So, you know, service berries and roses. I mean, I've had landowners that got burned over from fires, and I counseled them to go collect rose hips and disperse the seeds out there, and they have hillsides full of roses now, which they love, which the pollinators love. So that bears to the natural ecosystem, but I'll toss it to Sandy for your backyard.
Yeah, definitely. So that's a key word, diversity. You know, starting off with some early blooming plants, whether you're starting off with some bulbs or some natives. Like you said, there's service berries that bloom early, and not also planting ones that are manufactured hybrids, because a lot of times there's no pollen in some of those hybrids. So a lot of natives also do that. There's certainly non-natives. But then having that diversity going throughout the summer and into fall asters, there's so many different things that we can do to plant that diversity of plants that take us from spring through late fall.
All right, and the advice continues all the way through 10 o'clock this morning. So if you have a question or a comment for Dr. Kolb and Sandy, pick up the phone, give us a call. We'll be here till 10 o'clock answering those questions at 406-721-1290. We're going to come right back with more of Talk Back statewide here on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Whether you're
kids across America are going to school hungry, millions of kids every day. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures. To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Talk Back rolls right along with our special guests, Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin, answering your questions about your yard, your garden, forests, all sorts of things. And Tom is waiting on the phone. Tom, good morning. You're on with Dr. Kolb and Sandy. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Just a quick comment about, I think, California and Spokane and Missoula are spending, millions and millions of dollars on climate change and not much on fire prevention. But anyway, I wanted to talk about these seeds. I can't remember how long ago it was, but there was an exceptionally wet winter in the Mojave Desert, which probably includes Southern California and Arizona and all the way down there. And they had seeds sprouting that had laid dormant for 100 plus years. And one of the most beautiful things in the desert down there is the ocotillo cactus when they really bloom, and and all the rest of the flowers, and the whole desert, high desert and low desert, is just a bloom with wildflowers. So maybe a couple comments on that. Thank you, Doctor.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, when the poppies bloom in the Southwest, it's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And yeah, it's cyclical in nature, in deserts especially. They wait for that, once every 20-year rainstorm they get and adequate moisture, and it's magical. And, Sandy, Sandy and I were just talking about, you know, some of the previous questions. And, you know, one of the things we wanted to tag on to the pollinator discussion a little bit, too, is the use of pesticides and herbicides. You know, these are very, very useful tools, but they need to be used carefully and strategically. And so, you know, one of the things to promote pollinators, say, you know, we're dealing with knapweed and things like that, is personally on my property, I use mechanical means in the spring. And I only really use herbicides in late summer and fall. And the reason for that is, one, is we have a lot of spring annuals that come up, you know, whether it's glacier lilies and violets and all of those things. And if you use an herbicide, a broadleaf herbicide, you'll hammer those in the spring. But by late summer, fall, they're dormant. And so I only use something like 2,4-D that has a very short lifespan. It has a half-life of about 2 weeks or so. And I use it in the fall because my target plants like knapweed and sulfur cinquefoil and things like that, they're still physiologically active. And that's when they're translocating carbohydrates to the root system. And I want to kill the root system with the herbicide. And so I've very successfully used those short-lived herbicides in the fall. It doesn't eliminate them, but it really reduces the population. So I, you know, use it consistently, not every year, but when I have a bad population. And that way I'm not killing my native pollinators. And so, Sandy, and same thing with insecticides.
Really, and, you know, there's a lot of folks that just want to kill all the bugs out there and think they just need to broadcast, but they're, you know, really need to know what your problem is. There are so many cases where I would see samples come in that they thought for sure they had bugs, but it was really weather related. So, you know, utilize the folks out there that have that knowledge to make sure you're targeting the insect that's going to be a problem. And is it really a problem? You know, is it going to just do some cosmetic damage? Well, then there's really no need to apply that because, and there's so many sprays that are just target, like if you're spraying your apple trees, that maybe they just target just the caterpillar stage of the codling moth. You don't need to use a broad spectrum. Same with cherry fruit fly, the worm that gets into the cherries. There's a lot of sprays that just target that real specifically, not a broadcast spray.
And, you know, weather plays a role. So you may have noticed we haven't had a bad yellow jacket summer. You know, it's been very sporadic.
I've noticed that. Thank you.
Well, so, but that same cold spell that hammered the flowers, so the queens were out and active, and they got, you know, once they're out of dormancy, they also freeze and die. So this, even the thing that killed all our huckleberry crop and a lot of our fruit crop also killed a lot of the yellow jacket queens this year. So, you know, that's also very cyclical in nature. So there's good and bad.
Well, I will tell you, we have a little less than 2 minutes before we have to take our break. So any comments to fill up that time, Sandy, for you or what?
Sandy.
Go ahead.
So we talked about fire danger and cured grasses and all that stuff. So, you know, if you got a little delayed and you got tall cured grasses, our fire season goes till the end of September.
Right.
Okay, so you may recall back in 2000, August 8th was Black Friday. That's when the fires took off in the Bitterroot. So we have a good fire season ahead of us. That cured grass out there is still very dangerous. So if you decide to mow it, don't do it in the middle of the day. So humidity is varied by temperature. So right now, the only safe time to mow those cured grasses is getting towards late evening when the temperature is dropping, the humidity is coming up, or early morning. And because we're in hoot owl, you know, which basically means you can't work during the day with that kind of stuff out there. If you do mow early in the morning, you want to keep an eye on that site for a good couple to 4 hours. It doesn't mean you got to stand out there, but keep an eye on it, right, and be ready with a water source. If you hit a rock and you set a spark, that grass fires go off to the races in a heartbeat.
We're going to come back after the quick break here, the top of the hour break, and we have another hour with Dr. Kolb and Sandy Perrin. So if you have a question, or maybe somebody has asked a question that sparked something about going on in your yard and garden, maybe you have a question about what's going on in our forests here in western Montana, just pick up the phone, give us a call, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And again, we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate always Dr. Kolb and Sandy Perrin and their expert commentary. We're going to come right back after this.
views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
And good morning once again, everyone. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday, August the 12th. I am Peter Christian again, Mr. Nick Christensen over there taking your phone calls. And a brand new hour for those who are just joining us. Dr. Peter Kolb is joining us this morning, and one of our great guests, along with Sandy Perrin. Dr. Kolb is a forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry. And Sandy Perrin is now recently retired, a plant clinic coordinator. And they get together with us a couple times on a month to talk about all sorts of things that are going on in people's yards and gardens and the forests, offering advice and all sorts of commentary. So we really appreciate them being with us this morning. And we've got folks waiting on the line already. Larry is on the line. Larry, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. I had a question. With all the smoke we've been experiencing these last few years, is it having enough of an impact on the growth of the trees that you could tell that impact on the growth rings? I can imagine something like a volcanic eruption or the fires of 1910 could maybe impact that enough to where you could see that on the growth rings.
Well, that's a great question because there are some nitrates that come down with the smoke as well that has a fertilizer effect. But so most of our native coniferous forest, it actually maxes out photosynthesis at half of full sunlight. So, you know, we measure sunlight as light particles called, believe it or not, photons. You know, they're weightless particles, and light moves like a particle does. And so having done a lot of this work in the past, at summer solstice, we're getting about 2,000 times 10 to the 21st power photons per meter square per second, okay? So just think of the number 2,000. And for a C3 plant, which is our native forest plants, maximum photosynthesis occurs right at around 1,000 photons per meter squared per second. So when the smoke reduces the sunlight a little bit, it probably doesn't have much of an impact on the growth rate. But if it what it might be the opposite. So with one of the things that the smoke does is it keeps the air temperature a little cooler underneath it. And if it keeps the humidity higher and the temperature is lower, the trees don't lose as much water in the process. But, you know, it's a great question. I just think the impacts of smoke are probably overwhelmed more by the moisture cycles, which can be influenced by tree density, which is why we prescribe thinning forests that are drought stressed. But I'm not aware of anything we see in the tree rings. And, you know, tree rings, for those that aren't unfamiliar with that, so the stem of a tree, the only part of a tree that grows on the stem is a thin layer right under the bark called the cambium, or you can call it the inner bark if you will. And so in the spring, when there's a lot of moisture, the trees will use stored carbohydrates from previous years to grow new woody tissue. We call that sapwood, whose role is to move water from the root system up to the needles. We call that springwood. And then as the summer progresses and things get drier, that growth rate slows, and those are the dark rings. So when we're counting light rings and dark rings, it's springwood and late summerwood. So really, the growth rate is often more dependent on stored carbohydrate from the previous year. And so getting that delayed impact the following year, that gets really hard to correlate to heavy smoke years. Conceivably, it could have an impact, you know, volcanic eruptions, things like that block sunlight. But it's mainly for our forests in the northern Rockies, it's moisture. And so the smoke impacts moisture, then we'll see that. If it doesn't, we won't see that.
Yeah, we're going to come right back after this quick timeout. Larry,
okay.
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that excellent call. We're going to come right back, and if you have a question or a comment for Dr. Kolb and Sandy Perrin, just get on the phone, give us a call. They'll be here till 10 o'clock. 406-721-1290 is our number. Thanks for joining us here statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Need a your roofing quote.
Dennis Bragg with the updated forecast. Patchy smoke again Wednesday, but tracking changes that should help with clearing. Partly sunny with increasing clouds later. Still warm with highs in the upper 80s. A 20% chance of rain developing early Thursday, increasing to 50% throughout the day. Some of those showers may develop as thunderstorms, mixed with sunny periods and some lingering smoke. Chance of showers and thunderstorms continue Friday and Saturday, upwards to a tenth to a quarter of an inch. Overnight lows in the 40s, daytime highs in the upper 70s.
You've been diagnosed with COPD, but breathing is getting harder. Everyday activities take more effort, and life feels smaller. Is this you? If your COPD is getting worse, there are options to help you breathe easier. Learn more at isthisyoucopd.org.
Hey, we are back on TalkBack. So glad that you had a chance to join us this morning with our special guests in the studio, Dr. Peter Kolb, forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry, and Sandy Perrin, who's a plant clinic coordinator, retired now, but to hear with all sorts of advice for people like Jeff. Jeff, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Sandy. Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Montana. Land we have backs up to about maybe 40 acres of grassland, and it hasn't been actually grazed in a long time. So the grass buildup there is pretty considerable. And I last spring, I went out and burned my property up to the fence line, and I was really amazed at the intensity of that fire. It was just very, very hot. I had water nearby, hoses. I had pre-wet grass on the other side of the fence. I was watching for sparks flying. But even with all that, I was amazed at the intensity of the fire. And so you're absolutely right. I mean, you know you're right, but the intensity of a grass fire is not to be scorned or taken lightly. We have mitigated. We lived in Colorado for quite a few years before we got to move back to Montana, and there was a lot of fire-wise things going on there. I lived through the Waldo Canyon fire and the Black Forest fires in 2012 and 2013, had scorch marks on our house and all sorts of things. And so out of that, when we moved here, I removed a Mugo pine from close to the house because I didn't want it to go up. I put rock at least 3 feet and up to 15 feet away from the house and pretty much established a green zone around it and keep the lawn mowed. Is there anything else we can do? I mean, I've heard about people like installing sprinkler systems on roofs to take care of things in case a fire comes in to keep the temperature down. But barring something like that, is there anything else to do?
Well, there's a lot of literature on what's known as firewise and hardening your home. And so there are many, many different facets of doing that, you know, on your home, your home construction. And bottom line is, and again, I'll come back to this, if like this past weekend on a really hot summer day, if you look at your house, and please don't do this, but just imagine lighting a match, you know, the old wooden farmer's matches, as I call them, because that's what those burning embers are like. And if you can visualize putting that match anyplace on your house and it igniting and creating a self-containing fire, so one that won't go out by itself, your house is not safe. So that's pine needle accumulations, dead grass. You know, people lambast junipers a lot. Hydrated junipers are not flammable. The problem is they produce a lot of dead branches and needles underneath them, and they're prickly, and people don't clean them out. So any kind of accumulation of kindling, if you will, and that's dead needles on your roof gutters, things like that in your home. I mean, what you described is right on. You know, a green hydrated lawn will not burn. Well-watered deciduous trees will not burn. So aspen, I've been in some of the most hellacious burn areas. Aspens will die from fire, but they don't contribute to the fire. They actually take energy. They rob the energy of fire because for the needles to dry out, all of that moisture has to be driven off. So deciduous trees, and I draw the line at oaks. Oaks can have waxy leaves that are flammable. So be careful there. But the other thing, and one thing I've noticed, is a lot of people that are on well systems, their wells are very poor producers. You know, I talk to folks down the Bitterroot that they have a well that produces maybe a gallon, 1.2 gallons a minute, and they'll run their well dry in 5 minutes with continual use. So California years ago imposed a rule in a lot of places is you need to have cisterns or water tanks for firefighting, you know, and they understand firefighting down there really well. So if you have a poor producing well, put in a cistern. If you have 2,000 gallons of water handy to create a wet zone around your house, because when that fire hits, it's going to come by pretty quick. And if your vegetation is wet, it won't burn, and it'll save you. But if you don't have that water available, and the other thing is power. You know, your power will be cut during a bad fire, and then you won't have the ability. So a generator or something like that is something that I personally have also invested in. But then also forest management around your house. So we talk about the green zone around your house, but what you do your forest also is important. And so thinning comes into play, and I'm a big proponent of what I call shaded fuel breaks. So, you know, here's this catch-22. If you thin your forest too much, you reduce the risk of a forest fire, a crown fire, that only occurs under certain circumstances. But if you thin it too much, you're growing this grass that you're talking about. And statistically, I've studied a lot of fires, historical fires. More people have died from grass and brush fires than forest fires mm-hmm. because they move so fast. So firefighters that just got killed, they were in a brush fire. The Storm King fire was a live oak brush fire. Fire out at Helena that killed the smoke jumpers. That was largely a grass fire because they are so fast and they are so intense. And every site is specific, so you want to thin your trees enough so that there's enough shade to suppress understory vegetation growth. So you won't get that dense, high grass growth. But your trees are spaced wide enough that it doesn't readily support a crown fire. And mainly your trees stay hydrated because hydrated conifers do not burn. Okay, it's only when their live fuel moisture drops down that they become flammable. And so thinning is more about keeping your trees hydrated. So what is that ideal spacing for trees? Well, it's site specific. I'm sorry, but that's every site is a little different. Soils, your productivity. But look at there's plenty of trees around you, different densities. Look at the density where your trees are widely spaced, but you're not seeing knee-high grass underneath them. You know, pine grass, elk sedge, which are native, will only get, 6 to 10 inches tall. They don't carry fire real well. That's what you want.
Hey, Jeff, would you like us to hold you through the break? Because we have a break coming up here in about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I have a comment. I agree wholeheartedly, but there's just something I'd like to comment on.
Okay, we will hold you for that. And all the other phone lines are open, by the way. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. Kolb and Sandy Perrin, pick up the phone, give us a call. They'll be here till 10 o'clock offering you their advice and their knowledge. The number 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And I got about another 40 minutes or so of great advice from Dr. Kolb and Sandy. When we come back, right here, Talk Back statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. The battle continues against the big fires in the West Pioneer Mountain Range, the Sand Creek Fire, the blaze that's now burned nearly 20,000 acres. It's reached the top of the Maverick Mountain ski area. Crews working to protect structures there and also at Elkhorn Hot Springs. Meanwhile, fire teams continuing to use the Pioneer Scenic Byway as a fire break on the Bobcat Lakes fire. That's now 8,500 acres. Operations Section Chief Philip Knab says crews continue to work the fire lines and drop those ping pong balls with accelerant into the center of the fire to take fuel away.
What that does is that removes a load of fuel in there, and it basically takes the energy out of that fire. So that was a very successful operation.
The Beaverhead County Sheriff's Office issued a go evacuation status yesterday for areas from Billings Creek north, extending from Polaris into some of the adjacent subdivisions. Community meetings are set for tonight, 6 p.m. at the school in Jackson, and Thursday night at 6 in the Wise River Community Building. Those can be viewed on Facebook if you can't be there in person. In other fires, the Moose Fire burning west of Phillipsburg is now over 5,000 acres. The Black Bear Fire in the Scalcoho Country east of Hamilton, just under 2,000 acres, but with 10% containment. We're seeing more instances where Montanans are struggling to deal with the new work requirements for Medicaid assistance, Nick Northern reports.
New Medicaid work requirements could create another hurdle for some Montanans trying to get back on their feet. Under the new rules, some people could lose their Medicaid coverage if they can't prove they're working, volunteering, or attending school. Homelessness alone won't qualify someone for an exemption, although people with certain disabilities and medical conditions may qualify. For Missoula resident Taiwan Poo, keeping that coverage is especially important. He's dealing with seizures, homelessness, and an addiction, all while trying to find work and get treatment. Right now on our website. For the Montana State News Network, I'm Nick Northern.
Thanks to the Montana Free Press for that report as well. This is the Montana State News Network.
Montana's future is on the line. Will you stand up and fight? Montana was built on hard work, strong families, and economic freedom. Americans for Prosperity is building a grassroots movement, and we need you to help lead the charge. Our wages are among the lowest in the nation. Our children rank near the bottom in math and reading. Home ownership is becoming an out-of-reach dream for many, while government interference and radical regulations strangle our industries. Join us today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
Hi, I'm Montana Highway Patrol Colonel Kurt Seger, encouraging you to stay safe on the road this summer. More fatalities occur on the road from Memorial Day to Labor Day. To ensure Montanans and our visitors get to and from their destinations safely this summer, Montana Highway Patrol troopers will be increasing patrols. You can help. Never get behind the wheel intoxicated, follow the speed limit, and always buckle up. Together we can save lives. Sponsored by the Montana Department of Justice.
Hey, thanks for joining us on this Wednesday edition of Talk Back. Peter Christian here, Mr. Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls this morning for Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin, who are our guests this morning. And Jeff, we held you over, so do you have another question for our guests?
Yeah, I just want to say that during the Waldo Canyon fire, we got evacuated. When we came back, we found about a 4-inch square on our shake roof, and the subdivision we lived in, shakes were mandatory, so we couldn't put anything else down. So that has since changed, thank goodness, because of common sense prevailing. But we were two miles from the fire, and we were at risk. So yeah, it those sparks can travel a long, long way, and it's there was something else I wanted to say, but I can't remember what it is now.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll just reiterate.
Thanks for the call, Jeff.
There's the home protection zone that we talked about, but there is also your forest. I call it your forest protection zone, and there's different management strategies. They're not one and the same, you know. So you have your home that you want to harden against fires, but, you know, if you own more than an acre or so, that acre then is your home protection zone. But if you own more forested land, there are certainly things you can do to reduce fire intensity and the risk of fire in your forest as well. And it's different than your home protection zone.
All right, let's get another caller on the line. This is Kathleen calling from Victor. Kathleen, good morning. You're on with Peter and Sandy.
Good morning. My question this morning is, I have horseradish that is encroaching into my vegetable garden. What can I do to stop that?
Well, dig it up, advertise that you have it. People will take it, you know, whether on your own social media, you know, dig some up. There are some of those like that that just keep on spreading, especially it's near your vegetable garden. It's getting good water and fertilizer more than likely, so it's just really happy. But digging it up, letting people, you know, just put it out there, people will love it.
Thank you. I have a job ahead of me.
You do.
All right, thank you for the call, ma'am. We appreciate it. Rick is with us. Rick, go ahead, please.
Yeah, my second call this morning. I could talk to Sandy and the professor forever. I have 65 varieties of roses in my backyard, and I've got three that I'm going to plant. There's an old wives' tale that says, do not plant roses in zone 5. In September, and don't plant them while they're in a blush. And I also have two tree roses, standard roses. One I've had for 5 years, and I trench it every year. The other one is like 7 feet tall now, and I don't think I can trench it. But it's a zone 4, and I've figure out a way to insulate it during the winter time. My question is about should I wait until September to plant the other three roses that I have? And with my standard tree rose, the little one that I trench, I want to transplant it. And I've transplanted a lot of roses, but I've never transplanted a standard tree rose. Should I use the same knowledge that I have about transplanting that rose to a different spot where I can manage it a little easier when winter comes? Those are my questions.
Okay, we got about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, so I don't know about not planting your roses. Typically, you know, if we're in 90s and 100s, I don't really recommend planting any plants out if possible. But we're kind of over that break and the nights are cooler. So as long as you can plant those roses and, you know, keep them hydrated, mulch them well, I don't see why you have to wait till September. You know, our temperatures are more down in the 80s now, looking like it's going to stay more toward that pattern. One never knows. Yeah, it's your standard rule of thumb. You know, you transplant roses in dormancy. So, you know, should we get a good hard frost this fall and they go way dormant? You could certainly do it, or do it extremely early spring. But yeah, just your standard rose protocol.
All right. We have about 2 minutes before the break. Any thoughts from you, Dr. Cole?
Well, I'm thinking we should invite our caller in here to talk about roses with all the varieties he has. That's remarkable.
Or at least a garden tour, right?
Yeah, you bet. Put them on the tour. I'd love to get some photos.
Yes. Yeah.
And if someone wanted to do that, how could they? Could they email those to you or text them to you or what? If you want,
Sandy is retired.
I know. I don't. Okay, but I'm just saying for your own personal interest is what I'm saying.
I'm on social media. They can find me on
All right.
That.
All right. There you go. Sorry, I keep forgetting you're retired. Anyway,
but you know they have a great horticulture program at Missoula County Extension, and Sarah Holden's extremely knowledgeable, and she's always looking for great opportunities that somebody's that's knowledgeable in that. Maybe they're involved with the Missoula Rose Society. That's another great outlet, and people that have grown roses for a long time. They just finished up at the fair having a rose show. So there's a lot of different avenues out there for folks to you know, learn more and also show off their own yards.
It constantly amazes me when I go to the fair and I see all these absolutely beautiful roses and so many different varieties and new experimental varieties that people are melding together, if you will.
So, yeah, and you know, and it's a nationwide organization, so they coordinate with other states and learning the new varieties that come out and what works and what doesn't here. So
we are going to come right back, and the phone lines, by the way, are free now. So if you have a question or a comment for Dr. Kolb and Sandy Perrin, pick up the phone, give us a call right now. They'll be here for another half hour at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Of course, that goes for the entire state of Montana listening to Talk Back right now. Call us for advice from where you live. We're going to come right back after this quick time out. Talk Back is statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Hey, if you're waking.
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries, leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
No matter who we call family, when we choose to get the flu shot, we're protecting them. That's especially true for those who are 65 and older and people with chronic conditions like heart disease, diabetes, or stroke. Getting a flu shot every year decreases your chances of getting the flu. If you do get the flu, the vaccine makes you less likely to be hospitalized or die from it. Protect yourself and the ones you love by getting your flu shot. Learn more at heart.org/flu.
On America's darkest day, 9/11, our nation vowed to never forget. Let's keep that promise through education, remembrance, and honoring America's heroes and the families they leave behind. Head to t2t.org to learn more.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Talk Back rolling along this morning, the final half hour of our time together with Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin. And Mary has been waiting very patiently through the break. Mary, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
This question is for Sandy. I enjoyed a walk through the fairgrounds into the community gardens, and I was impressed by a small flowering bush. It was only about 18 inches high, very rounded. It had small white flowers, looked like tiny chrysanthemums, but it was not a chrysanthemum. And the bees just loved it. There were other flowers around, but the bees were very busy with this plant. I was wondering if Sandy knew the name of that plant that was so popular with the pollinators.
Do you know if you were in the pollinator garden or native garden?
No, it was right as you entered the grounds through that gate from the fairgrounds. And it was to the left, on the left-hand side. It was the very first plant there, and it was just amazing how popular it was with the bees. And I just thought, that's a really good pollinator plant.
Oh, you know, there are so many in there,
and a lot of
those are, you know, some were native, some were hybrids. I couldn't even begin to guess. You know, my thought was feeder few, but that's probably more in the native garden, not to the left when you came in that main entrance.
They need to have name tags on all of them.
They are working on that because, you know, that Rocky Mountain Gardens is only 2.5 years old, and there's only two people that are, you know, employed as far as full-time employees, and it's only funded by donations because it's not, they don't charge. So
I'm sure if I walked over, they would tell me, but I just was curious as to what that was because it was, they were very happy bees.
Yeah, there's a lot of great varieties.
I'm always trying to want pollinators in my yard, but I've turned my yard over to the deer, and if it blooms, they eat it. So I don't have very many flowers. Okay, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the call.
Bye-bye.
The whole turning things over for the deer, eventually you just have to. There's only so much you can do to protect your stuff from deer, right? I mean,
well, there are certainly deer-resistant plants.
Right.
You know, what we had discovered in our parking lot, they get far and few in between, you know, when it comes to that. I think the only things that we ever saw that were reliable bloomers were something in the Coreopsis family, so they had little yellow flowers. The salvias were definitely deer. Those are the only two that were reliable, but there's flowering shrubs like potentillas and spireas. I mean, you can certainly get there. It's just that it is, and it all depends on your deer pressure. You know, some folks can have irises. Other folks know the deers eat them.
I mean, imagine there aren't a whole lot of deer hanging around the fairgrounds.
And there are.
Oh, there are?
I mean,
okay.
There are tons. We did not, you know, obviously the landscape architect who designed that parking lot didn't understand that either, but they had an accident one night where a guy had ran over a tree, and so the cameras they were looking at, and they said there was like a herd of 25 that exploded out of that parking lot. So there are tons of deer around there.
Yeah, we have not found anything deer resistant. Even they were supposed to, they eat our irises in our house, you know, and they got lots of other stuff to eat. But it's like they have kids, and the kids go, "Ah, I wonder what that tastes like."
Yeah. And they'll definitely, you know, people say even marigolds, but a lot of times marigolds get yanked out of pots because they're trying it. But
we have two large barrels, one in the front and one in the backyard. The one in the front yard is full of marigolds. The one in the back was eaten alive by the just jumped and they ate everything off the out of that barrel. So
it just all depends on the young ones and how much deer pressure you have.
You bet. Yeah. Well, we're coming up. I've got a break here in about a minute, and when we come back, I want to give Georgia plenty of time to ask her question, get a good answer. And, of course, we are thrilled to have Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin with us on a regular basis to answer your questions about what's going on in your yard, in your garden, or perhaps in the forests and the wildlands of western Montana with Dr. Kolb, his particular expertise. So give us a call, 406-7 21290 or 1-800-568-5309. And if you're just joining us for the first time, perhaps if you're listening over in eastern Montana, I want to introduce to Dr. Peter Kolb. He's the forestry specialist with MSU Extension Forestry. And Sandy Perrin is a recently retired plant clinic coordinator, but we really appreciate the fact that you're coming out of retirement just to talk with us and share your expertise. Thank you. Oh, we really appreciate that. Okay, we're going to come right back. And again, the phone lines are starting to light up a little bit. 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. This is Talk Back statewide right now on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Your business.
Wounded Warrior Project helps post 9/11 veterans and their families realize what's possible with support and resources that bring warriors together and empower them to become stronger both inside and out.
It's possible to begin healing,
to get the help you need,
to find peace.
And as each warrior's needs evolve, so do we, because these last 20 years are just the beginning. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
Hey, we're back on Talk Back. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. As our special guests, of course, Dr. Peter Kolb and Sandy Perrin here a couple times a month just to share their expertise with you and answer your questions about what's going on in your yard and garden. And Ben is waiting. Ben, good morning. You're on with Dr. Kolb and Sandy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question for each of you. We mentioned that maybe the huckleberry has been frozen. Is there a better place to go that didn't maybe get the freeze to pick?
If people know about it, they're not telling.
I've heard Northern Idaho, but that doesn't necessarily, that's a broad category. But.
You know, I have talked to people and they are finding them, but it's very, very sporadic. And you know, so I think I would say probably your best shot is sort of mid elevation, you know, so the mountaintops are always kind of iffy. I know the lower elevations got hammered pretty hard. So I think if you target around 5,000 to 6,000 feet, you might find some thermal zones, maybe north slopes is what I would look at because they were a little later to come out and they might have not been hit. I think it's the south slopes that got hit really hard because they tend to flower a little earlier.
Okay.
But that's just speculation.
My next question is for... Awesome. I can work with that. My next question is kind of for Sandy. I live in the Flathead Valley, and I would love to be able to grow some variety of peach tree. Is that even a possibility?
Where in the Flathead Valley?
Kalispell.
Okay. I know there are some up there. Your most hardy ones, they're all zone 5, are like Reliance. There is also some what they call the Stellar varieties, Flaming Fury. You know, they're the folks that have Forbidden Fruit down in Paradise have some of those that they're bred out of Michigan. Okay. But the problem is, and even though that they're hardy and they make it through, you know, a lot of times frost hits them, freezes the blooms. If we do have 30 below, 35 below, nobody's hardy there. And it does cause usually cracking in the bark. Cells freeze, and then the bark cracks open, and then a fungal disease moves in. So, you know, you can certainly grow them, but they're not known to be long-lived. So just keep that in mind. Don't get attached to them.
And, Sandy, though,
okay.
Where I have seen successful peach trees is they're kind of thermally protected.
Right.
So they're kind of grown in a courtyard of a house where you've got a brick house around them, something that's giving them a little bit of thermal protection.
Yeah, even like around Flathead Lake, too, or rivers. Again, exactly. That's going to help.
Okay, great. Great advice. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. James is waiting. James, good morning. You're on with Sandy and Dr. Kolb.
Hello, is that for James?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Oh, I didn't hear. Okay, thanks. This is really informative. My wife's a landscape architect and environmental planner, and she'll be very unhappy she missed this show. You had a somebody earlier that was talking about a plant, and you had some conversation about there weren't any labels. There's a product out there that it's actually an app or whatever. It's called Grow Topo. That's G-R-O Topo. And it's those hashtags or Q-codes or whatever. And you can just put them on your trees or plants or whatever, and then just link it to whatever you want. Just a basic common name or, you know, pages and pages of descriptions. I think you just buy the codes and put them on the plants. And I know my wife has used them with some of the local organic farmers that are developing food forests. And that's how they keep track of all their trees and plants and everything else. So maybe that'll help somebody out there if they have an interest or anything like that. Other than that, I'm not really a seed head, but I found the show fascinating. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, you know, I know they are working through some programs at Rocky Mountain Gardens and doing that, but all of that takes time and someone to install it. And they are working toward that. They get tons of questions all summer long about what's this plant, and they are working toward that. But again, you know, it's a matter of labor time. And they have, you know, formed a couple different groups that are working on individual gardens, trying to get them labeled. But it does take a lot of time and manpower to do it. And when you're in a new garden setting like that, planting and weeding and keeping things, you know, watered usually comes first.
Dr. Kolb. Oh, no. All right. The phone lines are open, by the way, 406-721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. Again, Sandy and Peter are here until 10 o'clock, about another little more than 10 minutes from now. So if you have a question or a comment, get them in now while they're here, and they'll be more than happy to answer your questions. So and here they're on with us once a month here on TalkBack, and we appreciate their expertise. So we got about a minute before. Go ahead, please.
You know, there are some other apps that you can use out there, folks, right, that they can download on their phone. I use iNaturalist Seek all the time. It's a free app, and it's pretty accurate in identifying plants, especially if they're in flower. And there's a number of others, I think, you know, that between iPhones and Androids that are available that are really helpful to get you at least to the right species.
So technology and nature combining here.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I use that for plant ID a lot. I mean, I use it in nature and I use it, you know, in domestic situations too.
Great. And so we have about a little more than 10 minutes left in our time together with Peter and Sandy. So if you want to get in the queue, give us a call at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And again, they're on with us once a month, and we appreciate their expertise. So we're looking forward to hearing from you in the last segment of Talk Back here. We've got about 10 minutes left in our time together. So if a question has popped up, something going on in your backyard, you don't recognize a flower or a plant, plant, or maybe you have some pests you want to talk about, give us a call at 406-721-1290. They'll be more than happy to answer your questions. And, of course, if you're listening to TalkBack, we are statewide right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. And we'll come right back to wrap things up with Peter and Sandy after this.
Cold showers.
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back. Glad to have you along this morning, Dr. Peter Kolb. Sandy Perrin in our last segment of our time together, and Brad has been waiting. Brad, good morning. You're on with Peter and Sandy. Go ahead.
Good morning. I don't have a question today. I just wanted to pass along something that I found is a chemical that kills knapweed on my property. Or not knapweed. Well, it does do knapweed, but also thistle, mostly thistle. And I've had a lot of thistle problems over the years, and the deer spread it. And I've found this chemical that I bought. It's kind of expensive. I buy it in concentrate. Well, anyway, it's called Thistle Down. And I've used it, and it's in concentrate. I don't know. It's like $40 a pint or something like that. But well worth the money. And it didn't. I was really surprised when I put it on last fall, and I checked again this spring. It didn't affect the native grasses at all, and it seemed to they came up like crazy. And it was a really good product. So if anybody has any thistle issues, that might be something they want to give it a try. I've looked for a long time for a good product, and I thought that just passed that along.
That's called Thistle Down.
Thistle Down, yeah. Okay. And you buy it in concentrate. And it works great. I was shocked, actually, because I've been fighting it for a long time and with different types of products and tried this. And I mix a little scoop with a couple of gallons of water or how many ever gallons, according to the direction, and away you go. And, yeah, works wonderful. So just a little tip.
Thanks.
They're looking for something.
Thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it. Any thoughts from Sandy? Go ahead.
Thistle Down, I just looked it up. It contains a herbicide called clopyrrolid. And that is a very effective weed killer. It is, you know, pretty broad spectrum. It just affects broadleafs. It's, you know, even some of our lawn formulations have clopyrrolid in it. So.
And it can affect your trees as well.
Yes, it can.
You know, so whenever you're looking at an herbicide, you really have to look at the active ingredient. And there is about three or four commonly used active ingredients. Clopyrrolid is one of them. So, you know, everybody has different trade names. And trade names, other than recognizing them, as this gentleman just said, are kind of meaningless. You really got to look at what the active ingredient is.
Yeah, and what your surroundings are. Like you said, there are, you know, things that if you're using, like if it's in a grass situation where you mow that grass, you use it as mulch. I've seen numerous gardens pictures this year of people's peppers and tomatoes and potatoes and beans that are curled up or not producing right. And it can be a lot of that. And making sure you're applying it on a day that it's calm out, usually early in the morning or late in the evening, when there's no rain expected, because that's just a waste of that product, especially if it's expensive.
We've got about 3 minutes left in our time together. So if there's any comments you'd like to make before we wrap things up, please go ahead.
Well, I'll throw this out there. I mean, so I've done tours, and they're mainly forestry-oriented, to Germany. And this year, actually, February 7th, I'm leading a tour to Costa Rica for 10 days. You know, we fly into the West Coast airport, and then we're going to tour through the capital, look at pineapple plantations and water buffalo and the Carib culture on the Caribbean coast. And look at a lot of their forestry things, cloud forest, things like that. I normally advertise this to forest landowners, which are a clientele base. But I've got about 4 to 6 spots on the tour for that. It's going to, your airfare is on you, but the bus, the venues, the hotels, it's going to cost somewhere around $2,500 a person. Double occupancy is cheaper than single occupancy. So if you're interested in participating in that, I'll just throw it out there. Shoot me an email at peter.kolb, K-O-L-B, at UMontana, letter UMontana, one word, .edu. And I'll send you some information on that. It's cheaper. The tour group size is 18 to 20 people. Mm. And because we rent a bus, and that's a little less expensive. So if you're interested in doing that, it's a 10-day tour. We end on a Wednesday. So if you want to take Thursday, Friday, Saturday just to relax on the Pacific coast somewhere, you know, that's why we kind of designed it out that way. But kind of want to fill up the tour, so just to keep the prices down for folks. And we do it at cost. We don't charge. We don't make any money off of that. But anyways, and it'll be led by Francisco, who is our Billings County agent, and he's born and raised in Costa Rica and really has the inside scoop.
Give us that email one more time, if you would.
So, peter.kolb, K-O-L-B, at umontana.edu. That's my email. So just shoot me an intent of interest, only if you're serious, and I'll send you some information on it.
Dr. Kolb and Sandy, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
You bet.
It's always a pleasure to have you guys on. Okay, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to Thursday, what's coming up, sir?
We'll have open phones for the first hour, and then from 9 to 9:30, Governor Greg Gianforte will be in studio, and then we'll finish with some more open phones at the end of that.
All right, good deal. Again, thanks to all of you who called in this morning. Your questions are great, and the answers were great as well. We always enjoy having Dr. Kolb and Sandy here in the studio with us here on TalkBack, because they just love to share their knowledge with you. So, and we appreciate that for them. All right, thanks for joining us, everybody. We're hoping that the smoke will eventually get out of the valley, and we'll be able to see blue sky and sunshine again real soon. We're going to come right back. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock for another edition of TalkBack.